The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you from now until 12 noon today. We'll be discussing a lot of the issues of the day and also the issues that you want to hear discussed. So if you have anything on your mind, you can text us or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. Call us on 07491 25000, 0035 374 91 25000 if you're outside of the Donegal dialing area. Caroline taking your calls and producing this morning, and Shannon taking your calls as well. You can also use social media. We're at Highland Radio on X, we're Highland Hub on Facebook, also on Snapchat and all other manners of social media and interactive internet thingy-bobs. And you can email us at comments@highlandradio.com. You can also access the show live, by the way, and watch it unfold on your screens via your various smart devices. And you can also do so on our Facebook pages and on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. Looking at the papers, as we always do at the start of the show, the Irish Independent today says that households are set for a new cut of up to 20% in energy bills. Consumers could be in line for energy price cuts of up to 20% after wholesale energy costs fell to a fraction of what they were during the height of the energy crisis. The wholesale cost of electricity is now €87 per megawatt hour. That's a fall of 78% since its peak at the height of the crisis in the autumn of 2022. Dara Cassidy of bonkers.ie says another round of price cuts on energy bills is likely in the second half of this year. Now, the only thing I would say is, just as is the case with budgets, when the government are taking something off you, it comes into effect at midnight tonight. If they're giving something to you, they start giving it to you sort of April of next year. And I suspect this is what happens. If the prices go up, the electricity companies will be getting it off you fairly sharpish. When the prices go down, we'll start hearing the excuses, oh, well, we buy in bulk for 6 months, so it'll take a couple of months for the price decrease to actually filter through to the customer. You're thinking, I'm going to take, when the prices went up, you were at me within 5 minutes. But that's different, I'm sure. The Irish Times this morning, critical care at Temple Street failing to meet needs of newborn staff, highlight outdated care system for premature and low birth weight infants at Temple Street in Dublin. Also on the front, I mean, we're going to hear an awful lot about the Trump trials, and that's plural, but one of the trials just getting underway this week. And juror's toothache bites into Trump hush money trial. It took a toothache to halt the trial of the century. No sooner had David Pecker, the former National Enquirer publisher and the first witness in the Donald Trump hush money case in Manhattan, relaxed into a seat than Judge Juan Merchant was obliged to break for the day at 12:30. One of the alternate jurors had a prior dental appointment after a trial opening characterised by feisty arguments on both sides, the Irish Times tell us. And let's face it, the Trump trials are going to be something of a pantomime, I think, over the next couple of weeks, if not months. And all that will be happening against the backdrop of a US presidential election, for which at the moment Donald Trump is favourite. So he's going to be doing an awful lot of his campaigning in courtrooms in which he is on trial. As the old saying goes, you couldn't make it up. Irish Daily Mail this morning, the front page of the Irish Daily Mail, characteristic of what's on pretty much all the front pages in some shape or form this morning. Hospital was like a war zone on night Aoife died. Nurse tells of chaotic scenes at University Hospital Limerick as teen lay dying on chair for 12 hours. A retired nurse manager at Limerick University Hospital in Limerick says it was a war zone on the weekend a teenager Aoife Johnson died. She screamed in agony as her parents repeatedly begged for help before the 16-year-old died from sepsis after spending 12 hours in a chair at the hospital, her inquest has heard. Catherine Skelly, clinical nurse manager at the hospital's emergency department, who had 23 years experience, told the inquest she left her job at the hospital as a result of Aoife's death. That story on pretty much all the papers this morning. Let's look at the Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Looking inside, a very interesting story, actually. As it happens, I was in Kerry on Wednesday, Thursday and Friday morning of last week and had a lovely few days. Now, we were based in and around about Killarney, then drove from Killarney to Cork via Kenmare. But over in the far west of Kerry, over near the Dingle Peninsula, the government has announced the first marine national park and it includes the Connor Pass, which the government has now acquired, and world-famous Skellig Michael, which featured in two Star Wars films. It's Park na Siúnta na Mara Kiri. It's the Irish National Marine Park in Kerry, and it brings together, Malcolm Noonan, TD, the junior minister, said, it'll bring some of the wildest lands and seascapes in the country together in celebration of nature. And it's a really interesting idea. Now, I don't know if you've ever driven the Connor Pass in Kerry. If you have driven the Connor Pass in Kerry, it is heart in your mouth stuff in places, but it is amazing scenery. And you can't help but thinking there are some amazing parts of the coastline here in Donegal where you could be looking at perhaps doing something similar over in the west of the county, or indeed up near Malinhead, looking in Inishowen and the Fannet Peninsula as well. I was up Fannet Head the weekend before last. We were doing a thing in Fannet Lighthouse, and it's just stunning up there. I mean, there is so much opportunities for similar designations, I think, in Donegal, and there are coastal areas in this county which we really could be doing more, I think, to promote. Sleave League, brilliant job, it's amazing. I mean, but you go to Fannet Lighthouse, it's fantastic. Fort Dunree, and we know there are issues with an ongoing project at Fort Dunree, which I hope are resolved, because I think Fort Dunree is just an amazing place, and it has such potential. And go up then past Dunnoff Head, heading up toward Malinhead. I mean, you know, there are some amazing parts of the coastline here in Donegal. Looking inside the Irish Daily Star this morning, and local shop has a lot of luck. There was a €9 million lotto winning ticket sold at the weekend. You may be aware it was sold in County Limerick. Specifically, it was sold in Garryowen Stores. Now, Garryowen Stores was in the news before, because it was in Garryowen Stores that Dolores McNamara, almost 19 years ago, bought her Euro Millions ticket, which netted her an awful lot of money. I can't remember the precise figure, but I mean, it was in the tens of millions that Dolores McNamara won. And the same shop has now sold the ticket that won €8.97 million euro at the weekend. Irish Sun this morning. Again, we watched our Aoife Dye is the side heading. Main story in the Irish Sun this morning, movie director Sheridan Isle clear Bailey's name. Filmmaker Jim Sheridan plans to try and convince the world that Ian Bailey did not murder Sophie Toussaint Duplantier in a forthcoming movie. He told the Irish Sun I'll clear his name. Sophie was found dead in 1996, and Ian Bailey, who died in January, was the chief suspect. Her family called the idea that Bailey is innocent conspiracy madness. And it's one of those questions, will it ever now be properly and satisfactorily answered, given, as we say, that Ian Bailey has passed away a couple of months ago. And we also have a situation now where there is a conviction in absentia in France that isn't recognised here. And he is not convicted of anything in this country. He's been convicted in his absence in France, and it's a really, really difficult situation. So if Ian Bailey is to be exonerated by a Jim Sheridan film, that remains to be seen. Another issue that cropped up in discussions at the Garda Representative Association conference yesterday was that of a lack of training for dealing with riot situations for Gardaí. Frontline Gardaí aren't prepared for a repeat of the Dublin riots. It was warned yesterday. Havoc descended on the city centre in November with officers attacked and squad cars set alight. And ahead of the GRA conference, which kicks off properly today in Westport in County Mayo, the Deputy General Secretary James Morrisrow has been raising concerns about resources and training. He says that the Garda public order units are normally deployed for major incidents, but in the case of the Dublin riot, which quickly exploded, Gardaí, who were first on the scene, were just not prepared. And that is a difficult situation. Also more on the inside of the paper there on that Ian Bailey, Sophie Toussaint Duplantier story. It is the Lentil Noon Show on Highland Radio. It is a Tuesday morning. That means we obviously have our Community Garda information slot that will be coming up shortly after 10 past 10 or so this morning. So do stay tuned for that. You can also, of course, follow all of today's news. Make contact with us if you so desire. It's 086 60 25000 for your texts or WhatsApp messages. You can call us 074 91 25000, 00353 74 91 25000 if you're outside of the Donegal area. And, of course, you can also email us on comments@highlandradio.com, and you can, as I always say, you can also write to the show. It's the 9 till noon show, Highland Radio, Pine Hill, Mountaintop, Letterkenny. But reality is, just say Highland Radio, Letterkenny. It'll get there. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We're going back to a topic that was discussed on the show with Greg not all that long ago, and sad to say that we are going back to Rafoe to speak to the very Reverend Liz Fitzgerald. Reverend Liz, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
You were on with Greg not that long ago, a few short months ago, to discuss vandalism of headstones in St. Julian's Cathedral in Rafoe, and sadly you're here to have the same discussion with me today.
Yes, unfortunately I am. It was back in the 3rd of January that the first, I'm going to call it an act of violence, the desecration of the graves occurred. There were 8 that were significantly damaged. We had another incident in the cathedral in February, and where someone, presumably the same person, ripped out some pages of the Bible, which we had to keep the cathedral locked. Our cathedral was open every single day, so anyone could walk in, have some quiet time, have some gentle space, and we've had to lock people out, which is shocking and distressing. So it was Friday the 19th. Friday past, there were more graves damaged. There was one significantly damaged. There was an old headstone that was ripped out of the ground and smashed against another headstone. So that headstone is also damaged. There have been some urns damaged. And the other thing that really disturbed me was that there were big, heavy footprints across the top of some graves that are topped in soil. And it's just destruction and desecration that is so, so hard to even accept, let alone come to terms with.
And do you believe it's the same individual or the same group responsible for all these incidents?
Well, An Garda Síochána have been out in all 3 cases, and they have led me to believe, yes, it is the same person in all 3 cases. And it is a person who doesn't realise that what he is doing is wrong. He's a man who they've described as having significant mental health issues. So it's going to be much, much more difficult to stop this. You can't stop people committing crimes if they don't know they're doing wrong. But the hurt and the annoyance this is causing is immense, and it's actually overspilling into anger.
Yeah.
So it's not a good place to be.
It's clear then that the Gardaí have a good idea of who this person actually is.
Yes, yes. And they've been very supportive of us. And we're fortunate because the same guard was out in the 2nd and the 3rd case, and he'd be equally appalled.
Presumably the Gardaí have spoken to this person. Obviously we can't and won't say anything that might in any way identify anybody or point to any particular individual, but as you understand it, the Gardaí have spoken to this person. Have they given you any indication that they believe that they may be, you know, the situation may stop?
I have reason to believe that yes, they do know who this person is, and this person has been spoken to on a number of occasions, not only to do with this incident but possibly other incidents, situations. I'm in a position where I've had a confidential conversation with the guard.
I fully appreciate that. And of course, and I'm sure you as well, given your own position, you wouldn't want to add in any way to the distress or to the issues facing anyone who is already vulnerable, and that is something I'm sure that you'll be bearing in mind also.
But absolutely, but then the people and the families whose graves have been damaged are vulnerable as well, and it's an extremely difficult case or situation to get a good balance. But yes, there's anger, there's hurt. I think what hurts and annoys a lot of us is that we've now locked people out of our special space. St. Ewan's Cathedral, I mean, all churches and all cathedrals belong to everyone and anyone who wishes to come in and find quiet space. And we all need quiet space in this sort of busy, broken world. And we've had to stop people finding that in our cathedral space. We've even had to lock our graveyard gates at night. which is a strange thing, locking people out whenever we want to be welcoming and understanding to people.
You've spoken in the past about the level of community spirit in Rafoe and how that community spirit has been one of the things that sustained you and your community over the course of these incidents. That remains, I take it, the case?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. And again, this is where the annoyance comes in. I was speaking to the men who were doing the cutting the grass, and they wouldn't be all from Church of Ireland community, but we are all Rafoe community. And yes, they feel hurt and annoyed. But it's the overspilling into anger that is not useful. It's going to be difficult to get a good, calm, balanced look at what is going on.
Reverend Liz, it's a difficult situation, as you said, and hopefully this will be resolved, and that obviously is your hope and the hope of the families as well. I take it arrangements will now be made to reinstate those headstones and do what can be done to actually repair the physical damage, as it were, although the emotional distress it causes may take a bit longer to heal.
Yes, the physical is easy to resolve. It's to find a place of peace again. I pray every Sunday for peace in this broken world of ours. We look at Middle East and Ukraine, and yet we have broken people living within our community, and they need love and care and space as well. And I pray very much for them, and just for the community to be understanding and Give people peace and care whenever they need it, especially at the moment whenever those graves were desecrated. They need to find peace.
Yeah. And hopefully that will be found by your community and by all involved in this. But for the moment, the Reverend Liz Fitzgerald, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning, the Dean there of Rafoe. Reverend Liz, thank you and good morning.
Thank you, Donald. Good morning.
We're going to change our focus now and go to line two, where we're joined by Deputy Piers Doherty, who's a Donegal TD, of course, and also the Sinn Féin spokesperson on finance. You'll have noticed that your petrol prices at the pumps and your diesel prices have been going up and up and up steadily over the past number of weeks, partly due to the fact that the government is now effectively restoring excise duties that were cut as a cost-saving measure. Deputy Piers Doherty, good morning.
Good morning to you, Donal.
Piers, we have heard a lot over the past couple of weeks from representatives of the filling stations and representatives of the fuel industry with regards to this. I know it's been raised in the Dáil by yourself, by Marian Harkin, and by others. And one of the points that's being made is, look, these reductions were brought in to help people, and people still need help.
Absolutely. And, you know, ordinary workers and families need help. The cost of living crisis is far from over. Prices have not come down. Generally, inflation is still seeing prices increase, although not as sharp as they were this time last year. But families are definitely feeling the pinch. And what you would imagine government should be doing at this time is supporting workers and families. But instead, what they've done in this case is they've actually heaped on the pressure with a triple plan, three times they're planning to increase the price of petrol and diesel this year. They've already done it earlier this month. They plan to do it again on the 1st of August, and then they plan to do it again in the middle of October, which will see petrol and diesel prices amongst the highest in Europe. And will also see us taking more tax revenue on petrol and diesel than ever in the history of the state. And, you know, later on today, many of your listeners will hear the news, and the start of the budget recycle starts, and the summer economic statement, or the first part of it, sorry, is published. And you'll hear about the billions of euros that we have as a surplus. This isn't required at this point in time, and I really question the government why they're doing this. It's the wrong decision. It's going to put pressure on families and workers, put pressure on motorists, but also put pressure on those businesses. And I've raised this directly with the Taoiseach, I've raised it with the Taoiseach, I've raised it with the Minister for Finance, and they can't answer the question. What did they say to the operator, the retail operator who has a petrol pumps along the border community, which now will see petrol 20 cent cheaper before the end of the year in the north? And there's nothing that they can say because they know that that's going to put that business into serious jeopardy and risk the loss of jobs and the closure of the business if they don't do something.
And that is the added complication that this creates in a border county like Donegal, that people will have the option of going to Derry, going to Fermanagh based on wherever they happen to be, going to Tyrone. And we will possibly see this more and more. And it seems like we're returning back to where we were perhaps 25 years ago, when it was a similar situation where the excise duty here was far more than that north of the border. That changed, and then the situation flipped, and we saw lots of people coming across to filling stations in Donegal. A lot of major developments took place on the border, on the Donegal side, in order to facilitate that. They could now find themselves in very serious trouble.
Yeah, and look, as long as we have partition, we're also always going to have this kind of cat and mouse game in relation to different duties, different rates, and all of the rest. And then partition is probably a conversation for another day. But what you do need to do is you need to try and, you know, recognise that there is, you know, petrol shopping and other types of shopping that will take place if there is big discrepancies in prices. And you will always have discrepancies of prices north and south. Sometimes it'll swing north, sometimes it'll swing south. And retailers are well used to that. Now, when we're talking about 20 cent of the difference in petrol, that's a major difference. So we had the British Chancellor of the Exchequer come out just last month, and they made an announcement that the 5 cent reduction in excise duty that they had on fuel, that they're going to continue that for the next year. What we then had was the Minister of Finance saying, well, actually, we're going to increase excise duty on this side. So that doesn't make sense. And I'm not saying that we need to be hitching our policies to what the Brits decide to do, but you actually have to be very conscious of the impact on jobs, on the impact on family businesses, and the impact, obviously, on motorists in relation to the divergence of price north and south. There's like 400 different operators who operate in the border counties. Many of those are close to the border, and therefore it makes sense when either somebody is travelling through the border, whether they're coming back from Dublin or maybe even from a game of football in Derry or something like that there. If there's such a big difference in price, there will be an incentive for them to fill up. And that is a serious, serious problem. And again, it's happening at a time when this revenue is not required by the state at this point in time. The government shouldn't be initiating this now. They should be delaying this for a while to see before, until next year, to look at where petrol and diesel prices are at. We're likely to see petrol prices reach €2 a litre. And that's crazy for a lot of families. Like, it's just not on, and we need government to step in and support them.
In terms of the forthcoming budget, we know that the forthcoming budget will be followed by months, if not weeks, by a general election. Is there any question of Michael McGrath perhaps softening his approach the closer we get to that? Because if Michael McGrath is seeking re-election for the government, I mean, he doesn't necessarily want to be imposing further fuel increases with just weeks to go to an election. Could we potentially see the August one go ahead and then Michael McGrath start pulling back before October as a politically strategic move?
Well, it's very likely that the October one will go ahead, because they keep on saying that this excise duty is what's known as carbon tax, and, you know, the Greens are hell bent that they continue to put additional price on petrol, diesel, home heating oil, and everything else that we need to get from A to B or to heat our homes, despite the fact that this just puts pressure on ordinary workers and families without the alternatives there. So it's likely that that will go ahead. Look, our job in Sinn Féin is to try and get the government to take its head out in the sand, to try and get them to understand where ordinary people are at. You know, we're 7 weeks away from the local elections, and the government did decide to increase the price of petrol and diesel, despite the fact that we've had the sharpest increases in petrol and diesel this month for quite a long time. So, will they go ahead with August? Our job is to make sure that they don't go ahead with August. But at this point in time, it's already legislated for. It is already in the law. And when the 1st of August happens, it automatically kicks in. So, you know, we are calling on people, whether you support Sinn Féin or not, if you feel that this is wrong, if this is the wrong thing to happen for you, your family, or indeed the jobs that we depend on in Donegal, then to lift your phone to your local TD, to your government TD, to your senator, and actually make your voice heard, because this government does not understand the pressure, in my view, that families are under, and doesn't understand the impact of these price increases on motorists and others.
I want to briefly raise an issue that you and Deputy Patrick McLaughlin raised yesterday. 4,311 cancellations at Letterkenny University Hospital last year. That's more than 10 a day. And it's substantially more than 10 a day, really. I mean, that is a very, very worrying figure.
It is. It's, you know, we use the word shocking and all that, but when it comes to health now, and when it comes to our hospital in Letterkenny University Hospital, I don't think we can use those words anymore, because really, under this government and under 13 years of Fine Gael, this has become normalised now. These numbers are increasing. But it is now normal every single day, though, as you say, that people who are waiting for their appointment, sometimes they may be waiting for months and months, indeed some may be waiting for years for their appointment, that those phone calls are being made every single day and people are being left disappointed, say that your appointment has been cancelled. In most cases, it's because of the overcrowding in the hospital, because of the crisis that we have in A&E. And the crisis that we have in A&E is just a symptom of the overall issue in the hospital. The hospital doesn't have the necessary capacity. It doesn't have the necessary staff that we need to equip the hospital. And it doesn't also have the level of funding that is required for the type of hospital and the amount of admissions that we have. And I think my colleague, Pádraig McLaughlin, has been on that case for many, many years, outlining the way that Letterkenny University Hospital has been treated. The problem, you know, and we mentioned the budget earlier on, when the budget happened last year, when I got to my feet, I made the point that the government hadn't provided a single red cent for any new beds in any of our hospitals across the state, including Letterkenny. If you do not increase the capacity in your hospital, if you don't provide additional funding at a time when prices are going up, then you will have a crisis. You will have a crisis which means that people will contact me and other representatives in your radio station, and they will tell you about their neighbour or their mother or their granny or indeed their daughter or son who was on a chair in A&E for 24 hours. They will tell you about somebody who has been in pain waiting for that appointment and has had their appointment cancelled not just once, but maybe two or three times. They will tell you about how long it takes to get the appointment in the first place. We are in a state of crisis in that hospital, and unfortunately it's not just Letterkenny, it's right across the state, and it's because there is no proper plan. Sinn Féin brought forward our proposals again to government last month. It was about delivering the 3,000 additional beds, not that Sinn Féin are saying are needed. We're planning to build those, to fund them, but it is the ESRI, the Economic Social Research Institute of Ireland, saying we need 3,000 additional beds right now, and then we need 1,000 beds every year for the next number of years to deal with the capacity. This is what the experts tell us. The government decided, you know, as we know, not to provide any money for additional beds. And when they'll come onto your radio, Donal, and they'll talk and they'll, you know, they'll sympathise and all the rest with people who are struggling or people who are in pain. And people die because of this. Like, let's be clear. The consultants tell us that if you don't get access to emergency medication or if you don't get access to proper treatment, you will have worse health outcomes. And some of those health outcomes will be premature death. This is what we're talking about here. It's life and death issues in Donegal. And some of this can be resolved with the proper plan and with the necessary funding in terms of capacity and workforce planning.
Finally, one of the things that has been highlighted is that if you look at two league tables, as it were, one, the throughput and the amount of work being done at Letterkenny University Hospital, and two, the level of funding the hospital is getting. When it comes to throughput and work being done, the hospital comes in 6th or 7th. When it comes in at funding, the hospital comes in 12th, 13th on those two tables. One of the points that's been made is that Letterkenny could be designated as a Tier 4 hospital, and that would leave it open to more investment, more funding and more recognition of the actual work that's being done there. Do you think that would make a difference?
I think it would make a difference. But let's be clear, you know, the allocation of the name, the problem here is that even with the designation it has at the minute, it is not being treated fairly. And Pádraig McLaughlin's been putting those tables on the Dáil record for years with different ministers for health, right back to Simon Harris when he was Minister for Health. And it has completely been ignored. It's been ignored by the HSE. It's been ignored by the minister. There is a serious issue here. When you look at it from an objective point of view, that Donegal, given the level of the admissions that are happening, it is not getting the proper funding. So if you change the status of it, yes, that can allow for additional money. But you can also get, you could also have an algorithm that still leaves us short, even with a different status, because we shouldn't be short now. And that's a problem. Some of this here is political will, in my view, Donal. It is about making the resources available. When we talk to senior people in the HSE, you know, they'll tell you off the record that, you know, the HSE wrote to the minister. We know, we have the letters, and the HSE basically said, if you provide this budget, we will have to curtail services, and some of these services will not be safe. Now, that's what's happening in our hospitals. Like, this is the crisis that we have in Letterkenny University Hospital is man-made. It is made by politicians. When you decide not to make the investment, when you decide not to build the capacity, when you decide not to plan for the workforce, then you leave your citizens vulnerable. And that's what this government has done. And that's why we need to get them out. That's why we need a change. And I genuinely believe after 13 years and looking at different health ministers, from Bradker to Harris to Donnelly now, you are not getting change from this government. They aren't going to fix health. And it's time to give somebody else a chance.
Deputy Pierce Doherty, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
That was Deputy Pierce Doherty there speaking to us. And it's 21 minutes to 10 o'clock. We're going to take a short break back after these. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. One of the issues that's been discussed quite a bit, particularly in the aftermath of the recent referenda that were lost in March by the government, is hate crime legislation. And there is hate crime legislation going through the Oireachtas, but there's now talk of that being abandoned. One of those who does not want to see it abandoned is Donegal-based Senator Eileen Flynn, an independent member of Shannon Éireann. She joins us on the line. Senator Flynn, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on the programme to talk about this really important issue. Actually, 4 weeks ago, I remember Greg having an talk around the hate crime legislation, and I was actually on the broad of me back in Letterkenny Hospital, where it happened that most doctors and nurses are people of colour, and they weren't born in Ireland. So for me, it was like I was thinking about those people who have our health services standing how it is standing. And, you know, to look at people and say, what can they bring to this country? What have they brought to the country, you know? And put that aside, if we look at members of the traveller community, people who are disabled, LGBTQI plus people, there's misinformation going around that this legislation is about freedom of speech. That is not the case, and it doesn't impact on anybody's freedom of speech. It doesn't even impact if you want to be racist or if you want to be calling people names. You still have that horrible freedom of your speech if that's your character. This legislation is about hate. Hate crime, burning down, say, accommodation because it's allocated to members of the traveller community, attacking a Muslim woman on the street, I'm giving a few examples. And we sometimes forget about people who are disabled, people at bus stops who are disabled being attacked just because they're disabled.
And those things that you've outlined have happened in recent times. It's your belief, and you obviously are a member of the travelling community, and that's the community you know. You believe that hatred toward travellers is now actually worse than ever.
Yes, 100%. Like, we've seen this in the last number of years, even in months, where accommodation has been burnt that's allocated for members of the traveller community. We see it now along with hotels and centres are getting burnt that's allocated to refugees. Like, this is not the country that if you want, that I was reared, and it was okay to be that level of hatred towards community where we have a housing crisis, but it's actually acceptable to be so hateful towards the others in society. Now, I know not everybody and the far right are racist, whatever else, and that's, I'm giving those people their freedom of speech. They can say whatever they like to say, but this piece of legislation is vital for all people who are the others in Irish society. And again, yeah, for travellers, the hatred that's out there for us is more acceptable than what is towards any other community. Now, it's not a race to the end. It's just, unfortunately, in Irish society, we've normalised racism and discrimination and obviously incitement to hate as well towards members of the traveller community.
One of the things we're expecting to see in the forthcoming local and European elections is an increase in the number of candidates who would be perceived as being to the right, some of them independent, some of them belonging to movements, but there will be an increase in those who will be identified as being right-leaning candidates. Are you concerned that we'll see a number of those elected and perhaps some of the views that concern you so much actually enter into our council chambers, potentially enter into the European Parliament?
I'm a little bit concerned about the racism, discrimination, and how these people can even put themselves forward and the level of hatred. Again, I kind of view the far right a little bit different than many of your listeners will view them, because for me, it's a movement led by a few men that's making its way into a lot of working class communities where people are getting a lot of information that fears them. What my colleague Central in Yuan would have said in the Shannon, and it's something that strikes me, is that it's people with nothing fighting for nothing. And we have this, we have very rich people at the top. We've seen journalists who happen to be very rich, who's running for European elections, who is far right. And look, if they get in, that's up to people to vote. It's at the end of the day. But our country, I can't see them being a big movement. I can see them, I can't. But it's maybe other politicians would have another opinion on that. I can't see people in Ireland voting for them, because again, these are people that's in it for themselves. It's the people that you have with them, they're using as mules. They're just putting them out front, and it's all about them. That's how I see the far right movement in this country. Unfortunately, and I don't see them going anywhere in the next election. Genuinely, don't. You might get a few that will be voted, but I don't see them like being a big movement, because again, I think the Irish people and the voters in this country will make up their own minds and their own decisions. And we seem to be nice mannered people when it comes to live and let live. We see a young man here and prime time last week that was killed in Clondalkin just because he couldn't speak English. That's hatred.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even call that a person of the far right. I'd call that a person full of hate.
Your fear, as you said, is that those who are promoting these policies, these far right policies, are attempting to use the working class and use them as mules. Do you believe people in the working class will recognise that as being the situation, and ultimately the good solid people of the working class will recognise that for what it is and resist?
Yeah, I do think the fight or the challenge is with the government, but this is the government for you. And we've seen this long before my time, where they divide to conquer. So it's the travellers' faults, because it's the refugees' faults. It's people who are disabled. It's their fault. They get everything off the state. So it's all of our faults, without looking and saying, actually, it's the government's fault. Yeah. It's the government's fault that we don't have good health services in this country. It's the government's fault that we have a housing crisis. It's not other human beings' faults. Yeah. that we have a housing crisis, because many people who are homeless wouldn't be interested in getting into politics. All they're interested in is getting a house. You know, and again, like, they're using a political football for very, very vulnerable people. And the argument shouldn't be against communities. You know, the argument should be it's the government. And when I see working class people, I don't think everybody who raises issues and concerns about the hate crime legislation, everybody who raises issues and concerns about not having a home themselves, I don't believe they're all far right. I believe in this country a lot of people have genuine issues, and us, even, like, you know, I don't really, since I get into politics, I don't see left, right. For me, it's about doing the right thing for people who are struggling. But again, like, we need to sit and listen to each other, because it's like we can't just target and label people and say, oh, they're far right because of a comment that he said, and just labeling that person as far right instead of speaking to the person, listening to the person. And we need to do that as politicians, and also the people who say, like, they're on the left side of politics, they also need to listen, and people on the right as well. So I it is a little bit scary, and for me, the scary side of it is that open hatred that we're seeing on the streets at the moment. That's what's scary for me. I can't see Irish people voting in for the conspiracy theories people to run the local authorities and to run our office. But what I will say is that even if they were to get in, I don't know if it, I think they would only get one chance of it, because I don't think they'd ever do it again, because for me, again, they don't talk to the heart of people. They're very selfish people. It's about them and what they can do.
Senator Eileen Flynn, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And as you said, your priority is that the hate crime legislation that is already ready must now go through the Oireachtas and get passed into law. Eileen, thank you very much
indeed. And it doesn't impact on anybody's freedom of speech. I really need your listeners to hear that. It doesn't. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. Thank you very much indeed. That's Senator Eileen Flynn there. It's 9:09. Going to take a short break. Back after these. Caller says, I took the kids to Rosnalla Beach on Sunday and had to leave. A man came with two pit bull dogs and let them run free along the beach. They're a dangerous breed. Not only were they not on a lead, they had no muzzles either. Another person was there with five dogs, none of which were on leads. We ended up leaving the beach. A number of other families did the same. I appreciate people love their pets, but why is the no dogs rule on beaches not enforced? What is the point of a rule if no one is there to ensure it happens? Now, I do know, and when I was a child, and I'll be honest, when I was a child, I was petrified of dogs. And I know there are a lot of children who are afraid of dogs. And the dog can be the nicest dog in the world and the best. And I know dog owners love their dogs and dog owners know their dogs. But I think we do need to bear in mind as well that there are people who are genuinely scared when they see a dog. And we have to bear that in mind as well. Yesterday we were discussing issues with ESB surges causing problems. And a caller says, with regards to the problem of the outages, it's the responsibility of the owner of a premises to have surge protectors on their equipment. That's the view of a caller. Another caller says, just a few more comments. I find it strange that Fianna Fáil have a candidate of Brazilian nationality up for local elections that can hardly speak English. But no, I mean, Fianna Fáil or any party can put whoever they choose up for election. They will go before the people, and whether that person enters into a council or not is utterly up to the people. And that is the way it should be. If someone wishes to run for a local election, let them run for the election, let them go on a ballot paper, and let the people make their choice. And that is the essence of democracy. Good morning, Donald. Can you talk about people hiking up Errigal and Muckish with the wrong gear? We also need portaloos at Errigal, please. I certainly agree about the portaloos at Errigal. I did find myself at Errigal at one stage a little bit caught for exactly that reason. So yeah, absolutely endorsing that one. Caller says, what about putting cameras up at the church entrance and inside the church as well? And another caller says, it's a disgrace that the church has to be locked. This goes back to our conversation with the Reverend the very Reverend Liz Fitzgerald, who's the rector in Rafo, or the dean in Rafo, excuse me, and the fact that they have to lock St. Eunan's Cathedral in Rafo because of the desecration of gravestones and also pages being ripped out of the Bible in the church. We know that Gardaí are following a definite line of inquiry and that there are perhaps sensitivities there, but hopefully that will be resolved. Is everybody entitled to the €450 government electricity grant? I believe any of the payments that were announced by government in terms of electricity supports are universal. That is my understanding of it, yes.